This is the second year in a row that we've run Microsoft Women in Technology during Ignite and formerly TechEd. And I think it's just an awesome time for us to get together and celebrate the success of some really inspiring women in our sector. I have a huge personal passion for this area, so it's something I try and get involved with when I can. And I also really believe that Microsoft, as an industry leader, has a sense of responsibility to create gender equality within our sector. And there are definitely things that we're doing. So something we've done recently is we implemented a Shadow the Leader Day, where we had a group of young girls in their penultimate year of study come in and spend some time at Microsoft. And we exposed them to our senior leadership team and the way we do things, which was incredibly valuable. And a lot of them came away saying that they'd never considered a career in IT, and to be able to turn that around was really rewarding. So we're doing all we can to get a lot of females into technology from a really early age. And of course, this kind of event isn't possible without our sponsors. So I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise for sponsoring this event. And Diane Knowles is going to come out and say a couple of words to you. And she is the country manager for Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Services. It's a role she's been in for a couple of years now. And she's also held a lot of different senior positions within HP. So she also, on top of that, is the executive sponsor for a program called GLOW. And that stands for Great Leaders of Women. And she's going to talk a little bit about that today. So please welcome Diane to the stage.
Thank you. Well, welcome everybody. I'm really pleased to be here this evening, and it's really great to be surrounded by a group of like-minded people and successful people. Nice to see some males in the audience also, even though this has been introduced as being an event for women. I'm sure all of you are aware that women are vastly underrepresented within the IT industry, and it's really important that we all play a role to address this situation and to address the imbalance. This means that supporting young women, both in the education system and encouraging them to make the right choices and supporting them as they move into organisations and into leadership roles becomes increasingly important. To have women underrepresented in such a formative sector, both at the grassroots level and at a leadership level, means that the industry is missing out on the benefits that diversity can bring. There are a number of studies that highlight the economic and company cultural benefits to having a gender diverse workforce. The Workforce Gender Equality Agency has developed a really compelling document on this, including many case studies from multinational organisations and research from around the world, all pointing to the fact that having women in leadership teams and in business contributes to better business outcomes. At Hewlett-Packard, we're really fortunate to have a truly inspirational global chief executive and board chairperson, Meg Whitman. She's been with us since 2011, and her really impressive career started when she joined eBay and took it from a company with annual revenue of around $4 million to a really successful company which was growing and is now an $8 billion company. At Hewlett-Packard, she's doing the same thing. She's taking our organisation on a growth journey to become more profitable, and that includes one of the biggest transformations we've been faced with. That is our company separation, which is planned for November. This will see HP split into two Fortune 50 companies, HP Inc., the printer and PC company, and the other company, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, comprising of services, servers, software, and storage. Within Hewlett-Packard globally, we've created a number of initiatives to support, foster, and encourage the development of women in the workplace. I am personally very proud of the inroads that we've made in this particular area, and we've seen a really positive impact that in creating and encouraging a supportive environment. I just want to highlight a couple of areas that we're championing. Firstly, we have a local program within HP, New Zealand, both in New Zealand and Australia, called GLOW, which was referenced earlier, and that acronym stands for Great Leadership of Women. GLOW's vision, aside from connecting women together and ensuring we have a platform to network and share best practices, is also about putting a spotlight on how important it is for HP as a technology company to be supportive of each other, regardless of gender. We regularly have guest speakers and host live sessions or webinars for the GLOW community to share insight and strategies around topics such as work-life balance, leadership, career development, and general well-being. Part of this program is also to connect with our external communities, and we've had some great discussions with companies like LinkedIn, the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, and the ANZ on future collaboration and exploring how we can work together to deliver more unique events that are both meaningful and inspirational. Secondly, on a global level, we also have programs running to encourage more women in the sector. In the last few weeks, we've had several groups of high school girls passionate about maths, science, technology, and other such areas visit our HP labs in Palo Alto in California. And they have managed to get a glimpse of how women engineers are making a difference, both at an industrial lab level and beyond. At Hewlett-Packard, we're well aware that there is more that we can do to promote women and get them more represented in the workplace, and it's an ongoing focus for us. As a final note, I really just wanted to point out the fact that we've got some laptop sleeves, which you haven't yet been given, but you'll get to collect on the way out, that have been designed by Trelease Cooper. HP have purchased these for you, but the proceeds of these laptop sleeves will be going to the Breast Cancer Cure Trust. We think it's a great cause, and I think you'll find they certainly look great. So we hope that you enjoy them. I hope also that you enjoy the rest of the conference and the guest speakers that you've got here this evening, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's awesome to hear what other companies are doing in this space as well and how we could potentially work together, so thank you for that. We're now up to our first speaker of the evening, and this is Jenny Stevens. Jenny, I saw speak about 4 months ago now, and I just thought she was incredibly inspiring, so I attacked her after she got off the stage and said, you have to come and speak at Microsoft Women in Technology, so I'm really proud to have her here. She is a client education manager at Xero for a product called Workflow Max, and in her own words, she says her superpower is getting stuff done and then allowing other people to get stuff done as well. And I think that really talks to the way she enables the people around her. So please welcome Jenny Stevens.
Mainly the patriarchy. I'd like to smash that shit right apart. The promise of equality has been dangled in front of us for 50 years or more and has been very over-promise and under-deliver. And by us, I mean anyone who doesn't automatically and primarily benefit from the patriarchy, whatever gender, sexual orientation, race, or ableness. I've worked full-time for the last 30 years and have had more jobs in a huge variety of industries than what is decent. I've seen some things. Right now, I'm a middle-aged middle manager in New Zealand's fastest growing tech company. My first job was in a male-dominated industry. In fact, every job I've had has been in a male-dominated industry because there is no such thing as a female-dominated industry. Childcare, nursing, and teaching, the industries where women do dominate, are constantly undermined by a society that devalues anything feminine and overvalues anything masculine. They are underpaid, undervalued, and at the constant whim of politicians. The patriarchy still dominates. There is no opposite to a male-dominated industry, period. I have hope, however, that the tech industry can change this. I'm aware of the misogyny in tech. It is as flawed as any other industry is right now. But as an industry, it is a fast-moving disruptor and truly has the potential to change the world with us as part of it. And I want to be part of that change, however small my part may be. I've not heard any other industry even paying lip service to equality in the workforce. You don't hear how the hospitality industry is trying to improve conditions for women. In fact, as an industry, they're incredibly silent when it comes to how their female workers are treated by men in power. The most powerful changes which happen in the world or in our personal lives are often the smallest changes. They combine into one great big powerful force. The most powerful change can start with just four words of encouragement. You can do it. And that's it. That's sometimes all a person needs to hear. My parents were great fans of the how could you? Why can't you be more like so-and-so? And what a disappointment, school of parenting. It wasn't that funny. I heard a lot about what I did wrong and never heard much about how I could do something right. And I'm not even going to talk about the kind of marriage I got myself into age 20. But when I finally got out of it, I kind of lost my shit. It wasn't funny either. I was 27, separated with two toddlers. I was at the bottom of my barrel, and I had very few coping mechanisms. Somehow I got myself to India for 3 months, hoping for something to happen. Mainly travel, but maybe some life-changing moment. I took a camera and returned with about 20 rolls of film. Most of you look old enough to know they make photos. I was working in cafes then and showed the photos to some regular customers. One of them said, "You're good, they're good, you could exhibit them. The council even have money for that, and you can do it." Somehow, I heard him. It was the way that he said it. It was genuine, realistic, and it was inspiring. It wasn't the fake, "Oh, sure, you can totally be an astronaut." And I heard him. I did not reject those words. So I organised a small exhibition with dancers, storytellers, jugglers, my photos on the wall of an Indian restaurant. I even sold some. The following year, I organised another event, this time involving several hundred people, and all because of what this one person had said to me. A stronger person would have turned these events into a career. The thing was, I was still losing my shit. I was still at the bottom of my barrel, but now the barrel had some light shining in and there was a little ladder ready for me to start climbing. And while it took a long time for me to truly believe in myself, that first event was the pivotal point in believing I could do something. I dare not think where I would be if one person had not said to me, "You can do it." The patriarchy is my parents' voice, telling women that we are not good enough, that whatever we do is wrong, and who do we think we are? It is up to us to be that person who says, "You can do it." Take every opportunity to say, "Yes, you can apply for that kick-ass job, and you must do that new project, and you can start up a business with that awesome idea." Those four words, "You can do it," really do have the ability to change lives. Most importantly, though, we must hear those words. That was 17 years ago. In that time, I repartnered, my depression was diagnosed. Medication altered my mind to work with me and not against me. I was out of that barrel and I was looking around the landscape of life and my journey continued. Everything still challenged me though, parenting, work, getting out of bed. I couldn't have it all. That bit was a bit more funnier though, you could have laughed. Some people can have everything, but everyone is different. For me, surviving and getting the kids through high school was what I could do. I'd worked my way out of hospitality and turned myself into bookkeeper, ending up in the most boring accounts job in the world. It was truly awful. I was suffocating, and the path I was on led nowhere. I needed to make a change. I was massively into the craft world at that time and had been podcasting for a year or so. After going to an event in the US, I saw a dynamic, fun world and wanted to be part of it. So I decided to start a magazine, as you do. And I mean, how hard can it be? Yep. Within 2 months, the preview issue of Entangled magazine hit the digital shelves. It was a slick, high-end looking magazine, which did not look like it was made late at night in a basement garage in New Zealand. A year later, I realised my life hadn't really changed. All I'd done was add more work to it. I needed a leap of faith. So I left my partner, my job, decided the kids were adults and they could go flatting, and I moved 500 kilometres away. I worked 16-hour days. The magazine grew slowly. I went through a business incubator program, and I was finding out what I was good at and what I was not. After 10 months and a second magazine later, I had a meeting with someone who changed it all. He pointed out what in my heart I knew. The business did have potential, but it was never going to be the kind of business I really wanted. At best, I would be earning the equivalent of a corporate salary after several more years of serious investment with both time and money. I stopped the business the next day. My business wasn't a success, but my leap of faith was. I changed my life. I've now got the kind of work where I love getting up every single day, and I'm living my life on my terms, exactly how and when I want. It's always women who comment on my courage of taking that leap of faith. That's because leaps of faith are really fucking scary. But they always work out, one way or another. We must trust our strength. We must trust that we will survive a leap of faith. Even though I can take great leaps of faith, I still have to challenge my own self-perceptions. I've always wanted to speak at events like this, but I had to wait until I was somebody more important, until I realised I didn't. I first gave this talk in July at the amazing Refactor, and when the email first came asking me to speak there, my first instinct was no, I'm not important enough. But then I realised I had an opportunity, and opportunities must never be wasted. I may just be a middle-aged middle manager, but I am already somebody. You are also already somebody. When I was planning this talk initially, I wasn't sure the point of not being important enough was important enough until I had three different women in 1 week alone say to me that they don't feel they can speak up or do something to address gender imbalance in their workplace until they are someone more important. We are taught to not speak up. We are taught to be quiet, work hard, and wait to get noticed. Whether it's conditioning or whether men and women do have different ways of communicating, it doesn't matter. I am sick of us not being heard. I want the world to accept that there is more than one style of speaking up, and it needs to learn to have more than one style of listening. In the meantime, you are already somebody important. I give you permission to speak now. You are already somebody, and you are already important. We cannot let women leaders shoulder this on their own. They need us behind them. They are also being told to sit down, shut up, and go away. They are being bullied, threatened, and harassed. We are already somebody who can do something. Your voice is valid, and it is important, and it is needed. It has been 17 years since I first heard those words, "You can do it." In that time, I've done lots of things, and in some respects, I have done nothing. I am not a great leader with great power to make great changes in the world, but I am a middle-aged middle manager with the power to make daily changes to my world. I'm going to tell you that you can do it. I'm going to encourage you to take leaps of faith, and I will speak up, and I will hear you when you speak. I will add my voice to others until we are heard, and I will take every opportunity to ensure that the future women leaders don't have to fight this shit anymore. Thank you.
Cool. You see, long round of applause, Jenny. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's an incredibly personal story, so you're really brave for doing that. Thank you. Next up, we have got the Honourable Louise Upston. And Louise is the Minister for Women. She's been a Member of Parliament for Taupo since 2008 and has various other roles as well, including the Minister of Land. In her spare time, she plays a lot of netball, and you'll see evidence of this tonight because she's actually recently snapped her Achilles. So this speaks to her dedication and commitment for still making it onto the stage. So warm round of applause for Louise Upston.
Well, good evening. It's fantastic to see you all, and I don't know about you, but I'm going to see you in time. And I agree wholeheartedly that actually every one of us has a voice that we should use. There's nothing quite like being in audiences that are predominantly women. And you can tell by the energy in the room when you came in. So I was quietly down the side. And I just heard combined two massive interests of mine. When the Prime Minister asked me to be Minister for Women, it was just like I was just absolutely bouncing off the walls. And in terms of land information, one of the significant projects that I've got to look after in the next few years is the replacement of Land Online, which for any of you who deal with properties, bought or sold a property, is a beast of a system. And so replacing it will be no mean feat. It's also quite useful for me. I had 7 years in IT as a project manager. And if somebody had said to me, you'll work in IT, I would never have believed it. Had no interest, didn't kind of, just wasn't on my radar. Because actually when I was in primary school, I wanted to be an MP. And definitely not many people wanted to do that. Fair enough. And it's quite interesting because, you know, I was, you know, brought up by a mother who, she started a business when I was about 7. She had no idea about starting a business, and I'm like, oh, you know, she was a dental nurse, because that's what, you know, mothers of my mother's generation did. And anyway, she decided she wanted to start a business, which was pretty gutsy. And I guess I've never really given her credit for how much of an example and an impression she's left on me. Because I've always kind of, you know, had a plan. So had a plan that I wanted to be an MP, decided to be there by the time I was 40, and learnt a few hard lessons on the way. And one of those hard lessons was very definitely, as Jenny says, being told what you can't do. And part of my life plan wasn't becoming a solo mother at 26 and going on the DPB. And I remember someone in my family very close to me saying, oh, well, if you decide to have this baby, you can kiss goodbye your dream of ever being an MP. And I don't know about you, but I've got a really strong bugger you gene. And I was just so incredibly determined to prove them wrong. And yes, it was incredibly difficult, but actually that, you know, belief in yourself is so fundamental. And I still have crises of confidence on a regular basis. And yes, I think probably women suffer it more than men do. And if I, you know, what I've done very deliberately though is I've practiced being fearless. I, on a regular basis, choose to do things that scare me stupid. Because if I face what I'm absolutely petrified about and I actually manage to do it, yep, sometimes I fail, you know, land on my face big time, or not on my face with this one. But the more you actually practice being fearless, do things that scare you silly, the more you grow and strengthen that muscle called your own confidence. And you heard so very perfectly from Jenny before me, that's exactly what she's done. On a regular basis, take yourself out of your comfort zone, and that builds your own resilience and your confidence. And if I look at, you know, this industry, in terms of the number of women participating, it's hugely better than some industries, but actually we've still got a long way to go. And often people ask me questions and say, oh, you know, women have got equal rights. What do we need a ministry for women for? What a waste of taxpayer money. I'm like, yeah, well, in theory. It's bloody good in theory. But until we've got equal opportunities, equal choices, and equal expectations, let alone being valued equally, we've got a lot of work to do. But that work is actually for each and every one of us to do. Because it's what we do on a daily basis, it's the conversations we have on a daily basis, it's the supporting others, but also backing ourselves that make a big difference. So if you look at your industry, there's massive growth. 12,500 more jobs in IT in 2 years. What I want, though, is I want to make sure that a big chunk of those jobs are going to women. And a big part of that, and as we've heard the examples from Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard, it's about making sure that we are getting in front of young girls and helping them choose careers in tech, make them realise what it is you do on a daily basis. You know, when you jump out of bed in the morning and can't wait to go to do your job, you want to share that with girls. Research actually says that mothers are the greatest influencer on girls' career choice. And I think it's not just mothers, it's aunties, it's sisters, it's cousins, it's other people in the workplace that can influence the girls around us. One of the key parts of that is, you know, actually connecting, I think, connecting girls to what IT makes possible. So what are some of the massive problems that you are solving? And actually connect that to the work you do. Because I tell you, if somebody said to me, you know, you're going to work in IT for 7 years, and by the way, that's kind of maths and science, seriously, my eyes would have just glazed over, because I was not one of those kids at school. I might have been the kid that sat in the front row every time in class, but I definitely was not the kid that was interested in maths and science. So it's actually about presenting the picture to say, what is the work that you do every day make possible for the world? And that's really one of the exciting opportunities that we've got. One of the things that is fantastic with, you know, Microsoft having meetings like this is to connect you together as a group. But actually it's then to say, right, how do we harness this group? And just a week ago today, in this very building, I met with the Women in Spatial group. So it was part of the ESRI Users Conference, so all the women in Spatial. And they've got a fantastic program that's really reaching into primary schools and intermediates, talking to their children's classes about what GIS is. Because actually, 20 years ago, who'd heard of GIS? You know, definitely not me. I was fortunate enough when I spent time at Hamilton City Council to work with a GIS genius. He was an absolute genius. And it was by working with him that I saw actually what was possible in harnessing and connecting and utilising data and information. And it's about telling that story to others. If we look at some of the fantastic organisations, there's Girls and Games, there's She Sharp, the Gather Workshops, Rails Girls, Refactor, Future in Tech. There's lots of organisations that are encouraging girls to get involved. So I'd really ask you to be fearless, and if you aren't already involved in some of those groups, then have a think about what you could do. It doesn't have to be a lot, but actually anything you can do assists. I want to come back to, you know, one of the comments that Jenny made, because, you know, one of the challenges that we do have as women is the pipeline into leadership. And often I get, you know, criticism for the fact that we haven't reached our target yet to have 45% of women on state sector boards and committees. Well, actually, I would say for the bulk of women in this room, you're probably not interested in that. You're interested in your career. You're interested in how you can develop and grow your leadership. You're interested in how you can make a greater difference in your workplace, your community, your family. So for me, that's about saying, how do we make sure that the skills you have are valued and recognised and utilised? So there's a couple of things that, you know, really kind of interrupt, if you like, or are barriers to women's progression. And the first one is unconscious bias. So we all have biases. What we've actually got to do is draw some of those out so that we actually know they are present. So it's great to see companies like Microsoft who actually have unconscious bias training and actually start to show their managers and their teams what that bias might be so that you can set it aside. Because people make all sorts of assumptions about women and their behaviours and what may or may not stop them in progressing. Another one is, you know, often women in mid-career have children, enter and exit the workforce, and sometimes what happens is when you re-enter, you end up four pay grades down from where you left. Now, that's stupid. Who says that should happen? So it's actually making sure our workplaces, whether they're large or small, are actually bringing women back in and they're fully being utilised when they're back. And if you're a business, it's about making sure that you make the most of your talent, that you keep them here, that they make sure when they come back from, if they've, you know, left part-time or full-time to have children, that they come back and they come back to your company. So it's a matter of thinking, how do I make that attractive for them? The third part of it is legislation that we implemented earlier this year, which is the right to request flexible work. So every employee has the right to request flexible work. And again, some organisations are great, others aren't. But there'd be a lot of people who are like, oh, I couldn't ask. I couldn't ask to start work at 9 a.m. so I can take the kids to school. Or I couldn't ask to start work at 9 o'clock because I want to train for an Ironman. We've just got to do it. You know, actually got to ask. And there might be things, ask for a pay rise. One of the things that women really need to do a whole lot better in is asking for a pay rise. And that's what I mean, there are some very basic things you can do to support one another. How many of you have pep talks with one another before you go into a pay conversation? No one. Well, you bloody well should. You prepare for most other meetings really well. And if it's something you're not sure about, you're going to ask others, you're going to seek advice. But we just do this really stupid thing about our pay. And we don't talk about it, we don't ask advice about it, we don't compare notes, we don't say, you're working in a similar job in a different company, how much do you earn? Can't do that. Well, why not? Maybe that's one of the fearless things you could do in the next 24 hours. Practice being fearless. So there's some fantastic things that are happening in terms of women, and particularly in your industry. I think the fact that it's a young, vibrant, agile industry, there are masses of opportunities. But I would see, why don't you be one of the ones that is actually making it happen? And you don't have to be the chief executive, and you don't have to be the senior manager. You can be the person that makes an enormous difference in your organisation, for yourself and for others. And I'm going to steal Jenny's line to say, you can do it. And actually, if you don't, then we all miss out. So think about what you can do in the next 24 hours to practice being fearless. You'll be a fantastic role model for those around you, whether they are young or old. And the other thing, I would love it if you could at least think about one girl that you can talk to about your job and your career and how amazing it is. Because if we needed 12,500, if there were 12,500 new jobs in 2 years in tech 2 years ago, man, it's going to grow. And I want to make sure, selfishly I know, that at least half of those go to women. So I hope you're following me on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Louise. That was insanely cool, and I think there's a strong theme coming through about really being fearless and having a lot of confidence, and I think that's something we can all learn from. So thank you very much. That brings us to our final speaker for the night. I would like to invite Laura Bell to the stage. Laura Bell is an application security specialist, and in her own words, she likes to do bad things to good people's code. She now runs her own company called SafeStack that specialises in security, and so I'd love to welcome her to the stage. This is the moment, tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over, so we put our hands up like the ceiling can hold us. Like the ceiling can hold us. This is the moment, tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over. I'm a little bit different, I'm really sorry. I don't have a really inspirational speech for you. I come on stage and I try and tell you about a very scary world without scaring you. I come and tell you you're doing things wrong without making you feel bad. So let's begin. This is a story about security. And all of you mentally went to hackers, possibly wearing hoodies and little fingerless gloves. Maybe you said cyber, 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 like conjuring some demon in your head. That's not the story we're telling today. Today is all about you, because in our organization, security is actually a big, complex thing. It's not the firewalls and all the tech that's around our borders silently protecting us like Batman in the night. It's actually a bit about people. In fact, it's quite a lot about people, because people have historically always had a security problem. We are a pretty terrible species. If you have something that I like, say a shiny pebble, or some gold, or more money, or food, or anything, if you have something that I like and I don't have it, my natural programmed instinct is to do anything possible to take that from you. Makes me a charming representation of the human species. And I love to tell you, you're all exactly the same at your fundamental level. So, we put this species who likes to basically do bad things to each other, and it's how we've evolved and survived, and we put them on the internet. That seemed like a really great idea. And we made ourselves slightly more complex than we were. We were pretty much, you know, take it, you leave it. We were defined by our shoe size and a few government identifiers. And we changed that a bit. We went, you know what would be cool? Lots of identifiers. This is me. This is me 4 months ago. I did a tiny little 10-minute recce of all of the accounts I logged into online in a short period of time. I had 87 different usernames and identifiers, 28 different second factor authentication tokens. Now, admittedly, I'm not normal, but I want you to mentally think. Just think about your life. Think about all of the systems and things you connect into every day. Even if you're using the same username and, God help us, password on all of them, then you've got these identities all over the internet. You are everywhere in multiple forms. You are spread around the planet. You're not just in one place anymore, you're in many. So why am I telling you about this? Well, normally I wouldn't use a real case study, but Ashley Madison just happened. Now, why is Ashley Madison relevant? Now, it's not about the purpose of Ashley Madison. I'm going to clear that up. You can debate that in your own time. What's interesting, if you look through the list of identifiers, the email addresses that came out of it, was the types of email addresses people signed up with. They didn't go, I'm doing something sneaky on the internet, I'll make a new address. They did what everyone else would do, the same way they sign up for an eBay or TradeMe account, the same way we sign up to Facebook. We use the same email address we do every day of our lives. The sad thing is, we don't just do that with our usernames. What we're starting to see is the passwords that people used were the same ones they were using on other systems. Now, suddenly, you've got all of these accounts that are all different things, protecting bits of your own personal information, of your behavior, of your life, but they've got these shared pieces. These shared pieces that suddenly, somebody has spewed all over the internet like confetti, and people like me have downloaded it for fun and had a look. The problem is we're connected. We are all connected together in a horrible, tangled mess. And this connection is making us quite vulnerable. But it's also the connection that's going to make us strong. And in this talk, I'm hoping I'm going to show you how you individually
can become the army that protects your organisations, your families and your lives through your behaviour. Because I don't think any device is going to save us. I don't think the codes you write is going to save you. I actually think it's going to be you. And that if we fail, it's because we individually are not taking our own steps. We are all part of the problem, myself included. It was proven that if you give somebody just £100, they will give you any secret from an organization. You can normally buy a password off a bored person with a chocolate bar. We are not good at this. 93% of the organizations I've worked with in the last year never changed their passwords. My oldest password I've encountered now is 10 years in a corporate environment. He was very proud he'd never changed it in 10 years. They never changed things when people left, so people had accounts way after they'd left. That's good, maybe? I don't know why you do that. It's not like it's not a museum. We're not here to collect these things and store them for posterity. Most of our organizations are also putting production data, the data we collect from human beings, in funny places. We're putting it on our laptops to do some research. We're putting it on a thumb key. We're sending it out via email. We are putting data in places we don't know how to protect it. And if we don't change that, we can never control where it ends up. And then things like Ashley Madison happen. Our personal information ends up somewhere it shouldn't. And for most of us, we're like, oh yeah, but it's just my email address. But what if you have a way you live your life or some part of you that you need to protect yourself online? That your identity and your personal information could cause you physical harm if it was in the wrong places. We have to make sure we fix this because we're protecting each other, we're protecting ourselves. Oh, and we don't understand our technology stacks at all. How many of you write code for a living or have ever written any code? Awesome. How many of you have code on the internet you know is still running today? How many of you wish that code had died a fiery death? Yep, this is what the internet looks like. It is a tangled mess of intern projects and things we wrote in the middle of the night when we were a little bit tipsy and upset. We are complex, it is a mess, and we all need to take steps when we build our systems to fix this. So let's be part of the solution. You're all going to do amazing things. We've had two phenomenal speakers tonight who've told you you can do it. You will do it. And in fact, they've told you specifically some organizations and things to get involved with. I want to tell you you can do it, you will do it, and if I can help it, you're going to do it safely, whether you like it or not. So let's sort out the basics. Now, I want you to close your eyes, give yourself 10 seconds, and choose a new password. Don't tell the person next to you, it defeats the object. Try and remember that password. Right, moving swiftly onwards. First rule of Safety Club. Data is a privilege. One of the reasons Ashley Madison got into a lot of trouble and are now subject to a giant class action lawsuit is they didn't understand what the word delete meant. Just for those who aren't clear, delete does not mean make a flag in your database that says, oh, you didn't want this right now, but I'm saving for later. That's not what delete means. Do you know the best way to secure something? Don't have it. Get used to getting rid of big data. Big data is amazing for analytics, and it's a terrible thing for privacy. Security is really hard when you collect everything and store it forever, so delete it. Right, remember that password I made you set? How many of you defined it as a good password? So it was, you know, many uppercases, lowercases, special characters, numbers. None of you? Oh, good. Oh, a few of you. Right. How many of you can remember what you chose? Yeah? Okay, keep going. Words are expensive. I want you to strip the following words from your vocabulary. Cyber. Just don't say it. Back in the day, cyber meant something very different. It was a lot less serious business, and it happened in Yahoo chat rooms. Cyber is not a helpful word. Cyber gives us an amorphous beast that we're trying to fight. This isn't a cyber problem. This is a people problem. This is about controlling things, about taking basic hygiene steps. So stop talking about cyber. I want you to say less in your debates. I don't want you to talk for hours and hours and hours. I want you to say simple things like, you know what, I don't know. The strongest thing we can say in security is that we don't know. Because I don't know is an invitation to find out, to learn, and to understand more. So don't talk for an hour if you're not sure. Just say you don't know. but invite learning, invite other people, invite other knowledge. You can't make things more secure by making them more complex. You can't layer systems on systems on systems and introduce new frameworks to solve your problems. No matter how many border devices you layer outside your organization, somebody is just going to make friends with one of your staff, ask them very politely, and get the information that way. So bring things back. When you design your systems, when you go out and design your world, whatever your job is, make things simple. Simple things we can understand. If we can understand it, we can secure it because we understand what's coming in and out. We understand the language. There's no ambiguity. There's no wasted pages of PDF analysis and requirements documents. Keep things simple. And I want you to admit, and I want your organizations to admit, that you're vulnerable. The reality is we are all vulnerable all of the time. We put all of our stuff on the internet and we trust that today is not the day we are going to get hacked, that today will be okay. But actually, the reality is it could happen at any point. You know, we are spread across 87 identifiers on the internet, across 6 different banks. Statistics says somebody is going to have a go at one of those. So prepare for it and go talk to your peers, talk to your family, talk to your colleagues and say, so what do I do if I get hacked? How can I make this better? How can I make this more secure? Every single one of us needs to do this. I don't want you to ever say that this is the job of some expert in a corner. I'm hoping that the day comes when I'm redundant. I really want to be redundant, like island in Fiji, kind of redundant. So to do that, I've got to get everything I know and everything that I wish in the world into people like you, and I need you to spread it like a virus. So you're kind of group zero, I guess. I want you to take it to your organizations, and I want you to encourage them just to do simple things today. Just look at your passwords. Look at the systems you use in your personal life and where they meet your professional life, and start making little changes. Because we live in this horribly connected world for people, and we're going to do amazing things. We're going to do it together. We're going to do it in teams and organizations and all of these special areas where we come together and share our interests and our lives. But to do that safely, we kind of have to go and protect it together. And that's going to take every single one of you. So yeah. You've got homework. Raise your hand if you can remember the password. How many of you chose a password you already use for a system? Yeah, okay, statistically proven. We've all got work to do. Okay, if you've got any questions, I'll be around, but thank you very much.
Cool, thank you, Laura. I'm definitely off to change my password tonight, that's for sure. And you've made me think twice about my organisation's security and my personal online presence as well. So thank you very much. And that brings us to a wrap for the evening. So I hope you all found something that resonated with you. And do let us know what you think. So this year, the evaluation for Women in Tech is part of your overall Ignite conference evaluation. So fill out the couple of questions in there. And if you're not a delegate, feel free to come to me directly and give me some feedback. And we'll catch you all outside. The speakers will be there. And I hope you enjoyed yourselves. Cool. Thank you.